Ladies and gentlemen, live from the West Coast, it's time for Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Your inside look into combat sports.
You know what? As long as she fights 135 pounds, I don't care if she's injecting a horse demon into her eyeballs.
And now, the host of the longest running fight show in radio and internet history.
But I want to start getting paid. I want to start making heavyweight money.
Pedro Fernandez.
Yeah, just excited to be back. I wish we could do a fight every night. You know me, Pedro.
Damas y caballeros, bienvenidos, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Sports Byline headquarters here in the city of by the Bay, San Francisco, California, for another edition of Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Often imitated but never duplicated, 37 plus years now of knocking out all bums. My name is Pedro Fernandez. Welcome to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. For the next 2 hours, we hope to have some fun. We hope to irritate some people. We hope to inform some people as well. So I can do all three things. I think I've done my job. Straight up, this is Ring Talk Live Worldwide. The Godfather, Larry Merchant. Of course, the retired HBO Godfather would join us at about 24 minutes past the hour, somewhere around there. So check in, of course, from the City of Angels. Talk about last night's fight. And, of course, last night's fight was a bit predictable, although some people thought that Kell Brook was gonna win. I saw it on the internet. A couple people picking Kell Brook to win, betting on Kell Brook, but he was a 13-1 underdog, straight up a 13-1 underdog. Of course, he last in the fourth round. I thought he won the first two without question, but then once Crawford was able to establish himself as a southpaw and close that distance and figure the guy out, once he hit him with that punch he didn't see, it was all over. We'll hear from both Kell Brook and the still champion, still WBO welterweight champion. Talk about Mr. Terrence Crawford. Omaha, Nebraska. Give him some props. He's beaten everybody they put in front of him. Everybody they put in front of him, folks. You know, and I may knock some of the guys that he fought. Maybe the competition wasn't the greatest in the world, but it is what it is. He beat the best guys out there. So straight up, we want him and Errol Spence to hook it up. Of course, if Errol Spence is successful next month against, later this month against, of course, Danny Garcia and Errol Spence hooking it up on that welterweight showdown. Straight up, we'll see if Spence has anything left because, you know, Errol got tossed out of a car at 120 miles per hour. Guys just don't recover that quick, or do they? You're tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Back with the champ after the break.
Woo, it's gonna be good.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
I stick my neck out for nobody.
He came to dance, no doubt about that. Talking about Terrence Crawford, of course, the WBO welterweight title holder after holding titles at 135 and 140 pounds. That's a lightweight, junior welterweight, now welterweight, 37 and zip. Wow, 26 scales. What can I say about last night's fight other than once he was able to figure out Kell Brook, in other words, once he was able to figure him out and close the distance, in other words, he started out as an orthodox fighter with using the left jab, and that wasn't working all that well. Then he realized he had to adapt, and he switched over to southpaw. And before you knew it, well, the fight that was close wasn't.
All right, Terrence Crawford still discussing the victory with promoter Bob Arum. Terrence, it was close until it wasn't. What did you see that you were able to take advantage of?
Well, I was just trying to gauge the distance. You know, he had good distance, you know, and I was trying to find my rhythm in between, you know, getting my distance together. And, you know, that's why it was so competitive at first. I couldn't get my shots off.
What adjustments were you able to make to finally get to Kell Brook?
Well, you know, just step forward a little more, throw a little more punches, but not too much. And I caught up with him a couple of times.
I know that you always talk about having to excel the expectations for you. Well, you did tonight because it took Errol Spence 11 rounds to beat him, and you did it in four. Does that mean anything to you?
Not at all. You know, it was different fights, you know, different, years and whatnot. But Kell's a tremendous talent. I can't take nothing away from him. He came and he tried to take my title. He was in shape. He made the weight. So there was no excuses to be put on the table. He just came off of three wins, not coming off of a loss. So he had his confidence up, and he lost to the better man tonight.
You've been clear. The names you want are Manny Pacquiao, Errol Spence. How do you make that happen?
Let me tell you something, and I mean this. Spence and Garcia are fighting December 5. If they really want to make a big pay-per-view, I'll put Terrence Crawford in with both of them, one at a time, and he beat both of them the same night. He is far and away the best welterweight in the world. He goes back to the great welterweights like Ray Leonard and Tommy Hearns. He would have been competitive with them. The welterweights around now are not competitive with Terrence Crawford.
And Bob, you know that what made that era great is that everybody fought everybody. And you were able to make the fights with the heavyweights, Deontay Wilder and Tyson Fury, twice. Will we see Bud in the ring with Errol Spence in the near future?
Errol Spence will try to avoid Terrence Crawford as long as he can because he knows he can't beat Terrence Crawford. You saw the performance tonight. I mean, he'll take out Errol Spence in about the same number of rounds like he took out Kell Brook.
Bob Arum, of course, talking about his boy Terrence Crawford, Omaha, Nebraska, still undefeated. But, Lino, before I go to Kell Brook in a short interview, let's go over the opponents that Terrence Crawford has beaten since he grabbed the world championship back in 2014, when he grabbed the WBO lightweight title. Okay, he won a unanimous decision over Ricky Burns from England. Then he beat Yuri Gamboa with a TKO. Then he beat Raimundo Beltran, Thomas Dorlamy, De'Ara Jean, Henry Lundy, Victor Postal, John Molina, Felix Diaz, Julius Ndongo, Jeff Horn, Jose Benavides, Amir Khan, a real Amir Khan, Agidus Cavalidis, and then last night, Kell Brook. So outside of Kell Brook, which one of those guys were good? Which one of those guys are really super world class? Which one of those guys presented a challenge to Crawford? None of them. Crawford's first challenge was last night. I think he met it. I think he performed admirably. There's no doubt about it. I mean, ending that fight the way he did it, nobody's talking controversy. It wasn't controversial. You get hit with a shot that you don't see, baby, and it's all over.
This is boxing. I obviously got caught with a shot I didn't see. And the referee waved it off. You know, that's never happened to me before, but I've always said if I'm in a fight and I'm going to lose, you know, I'm going to go out of my shield. And, you know, the referee obviously seen that I couldn't continue, so the fight is over, you know. So I don't like to lose on an injury and stuff like that. You know, if I'm going to lose, then I'd rather lose out of my shield, you know. The better man won tonight.
Kell, you've been in there with the best in the world. You've been in there with the very best of the welterweight division. You've been in with Spence, Triple G, Sean Porter. What was different, or was anything different, about Terrence Crawford?
You know, I can't, even though I've been beat by him, I can't sit here now and say he beat Spence, he beat Porter, because styles make fights, you know. But one thing he has got good distance, and he's got fast stands, obviously, and he's got a good eye, you know, to land a shot, you know. So it'd be very interesting, you know. He's definitely, you know, because that's never in my career. Nobody's ever done that to me in sparring or anything, you know. So, obviously, it's different with 8 ounce gloves on, but it was one of them, you know. I got caught with a shot I didn't see.
Well, that's why we sort of cut the interview off there, because he was starting to sound a little scrambled. You know, I mean, the guy got knocked out. I give him all the credit to come out there and do the interview. I mean, after getting drilled like that, that's probably not the best time to be interviewed on national television, international television, after, you know, getting your senses, you know, disconnected there for a couple of seconds. He was neurologically short-circuited. I mean, the fight was appropriately stopped, no doubt about it. There's no controversy there. And, of course, Bud Crawford, still undefeated, but who's he fought? Outside of guys like me and Cut. I mean, I name those guys. I mean, any Hall of Famers there? Anybody you even consider? Maybe Jeff Horner when the Australian, get into the Australian Hall of Fame. But outside of that, Jose Benavides, Amir Khan, I mean, John Molina, Victor Postal. Come on, man. These aren't Hall of Fame guys. These aren't studs. But last night, he stepped up. And he fought in what people thought was a stud. I thought that, you know, Kell Brook would come in and present a formidable challenge. And he did for a couple of rounds. But at the end of the night, Kell Brook, damaged goods, baby. Of course, got his face broken by Gennady Golovkin in that middleweight fight. Then he came down to a 147, and Errol Spence broke the bones again, the same orbital bones in his face. So he's been damaged goods for a while, but last night he put up a brave fight before getting drilled. You know, and you got to give Crawford all the credit in the world, but still, You look back at his resume, who has he really fought? Answer that question. Hey, take that back. Shoot me a text if you can answer that question. Who has Terrence Crawford fought that's really been good? 415-275-1613. The text line, once again, here's a question. Who did Terrence Crawford beat that was really good? 415-275-1613. That's 415-275-1613. A little controversy last night. The Nevada State Athletic Commission goes, Russell Moore, the referee, in charge of the controversy. Again, good old Russell. Anyway, Russell's a referee for Joshua Franco and Mr. Maloney. Of course, Maloney coming to us from the UK, and he's a nice little fighter, and everybody thought that maybe he was winning the fight, and of course, until they stopped the fight. But they only stopped it in the third round. They said it was a headbutt that's caused some swelling, this and that. They looked at the tapes for like 30 minutes. They kept going back and forth, looking at the instant replay for 30 minutes. If you couldn't tell the first time you looked at it, or the second time, what good did it do looking at the other 47 times? I don't understand. But anyway, Robert Byrd was the ringside official in charge of the instant replay, and Russell Moore was the in-ring referee. And between the two of them, they were just incompetent, and I think they might have blown it there. I think they really might have blown it, because I thought that Maloney's jab was working. I thought the jab caused the swelling and that Mr. Franco got out of there. Larry, luckily, with his title. I thought it was a bit of a stinker. If anything stunk last night, that was it. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide, your inside look into the world of boxing and MMA. Of course, Larry Merchant, a retired HBO godfather, coming up right after the break. Of course, open phone lines all around the planet. 1-800-878-7529. That's 1-800-878-7529. Of course, Ring Talk, the Sunday edition. 2 hours coming to you live from the Sports Byline Studios in the city, by the way, San Francisco, California. This is the 11 a.m. show, of course, Pacific time. 11 a.m. Pacific time, 2 p.m. Eastern time, and 8 p.m. for my friends in Honolulu, Hawaii. Straight up, this is Ring Talk and Tower of Power. Down to the nightclub, to the break. I'm just hanging out, looking for a place to party.
To the nightclub, ooh, ooh, ooh. Women you ride, get you ready. To the nightclub, we go bump de bump de bump, bump shit. Sitting by the dance floor, checking it out, watching the man with the fat feet. Got the hippest friends in the bad boogaloo, the big old bag of tricks. Down to the nightclub,
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
I'm just ready to get it on and crush this guy's skull.
Ah, I feel good.
The Godfather of Soul means the retired HBO Godfather is on the line for the City of Angels. A very good morning to you, sir.
Back at you, Pedro.
Larry Merchant, how's life treating you?
Well, I'm looking out some high windows I have. It's perfect blue skies and leaves barely moving, and that's life, and that's pretty good right now.
Okay. Terrence Crawford, still unbeaten last night, of course, taking out Kell Brook in the fourth round. When you get, take my word for it, when you get hit with a punch, you don't see the world comes to an end very quickly. And that's what happened to Kell Brook last night. But he was a 13-1 favorite. Minus 1,300 was Crawford in there. So can we really put... he went out there and took care of business, but that's what you should have done with a 13-1 underdog, right?
That is correct, sir.
Okay,
Kell Brook is not ranked in the top 10 of welterweights.
Okay, so I hate dogging guys, and this hurts me, but Ricky Burns, Yuri Gamboa, Raimundo Beltran, Thomas Dworlamy, Thierry Jean, Henry Lundy, Victor Postal, John Molina, Felix Diaz, Julius Ndongo, Jeff Horn, Jose Benavidez, Amir Khan, some guy named Igadis, Cavallis, and then Kell Brook. I mean, yeah, Crawford's still unbeaten, but of all those championship fights he had, I don't see anybody there that's even knocking on the door to the Hall of Fame.
You are correct, sir. And, as the saying goes, it is what it is. Kell Brook is a British fighter, mm-hmm. and would generate some serious money for that caliber of fight over in Britain. Reportedly made a couple $1 million. And Crawford is Crawford, and still hasn't been in that position where he can show how much of an attraction he is.
Can you think of anybody in the last 15 or 20 years that's been in that? I mean, Marvin Hagler was in that position as a middleweight because there was nobody to fight until he got the guys to move up, like Mugabe, Hearns, and Leonard and Duran. I mean, outside of those four opponents, all of his middleweight guys were like not, you know, Hall of Famers.
Well, look, you know, sometimes a guy, a champion is just too good for everybody.
Okay.
And sometimes the way the calendar works out, he gets a gimme. Or he turns what might even have been a competitive fight into a gimme. Mm-hmm. Some guys are that good. Is Crawford in that class? Maybe, because we don't know. And he certainly looks like a superior fighter, boxer, puncher, who has his wits all about him in the ring and also has a fury in him when the opportunity presents itself. Whether he's going to get to fight Spence or Pacquiao and get the attention of people who aren't great boxing fans but would want to see a great boxing match remains to be seen, but time is moving on.
Doesn't Crawford and Pacquiao have an Ali Holmes air to it?
You know what? I don't know. It could be. You're correct about that.
Wait, hold on.
I don't blame Pacquiao for not wanting to fight Crawford, who is never proven to be a major attraction.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how big a fight with Spence would be, but it would be a pretty major event.
Yeah. The comparison I was making to Ali Holmes is that, you know, Holmes was a young champion and small, strong, and Ali was the old champion, and I don't want to think of Manny Pacquiao getting lit up like that. But then again, Pacquiao is not like Ali because he's left-handed and he's fast and he moves. I mean, he's counter normal to other boxers as far as that style he's got. So that gives him an edge even as he moves up in age.
When you're smart and fast, and you can punch, and you don't fight that often, apparently you can maintain your presence in the game for a long time, and that's what Manny has done. But there are a couple of opponents that Crawford could take on besides the top guys in trying to force a fight. Keith Thurman, who was upset by Pacquiao in his last outing. Yes, Danny Garcia. Maybe even Mikey Garcia. Those would be, you know, attractive fights, if not big international-style get-ups. But that's the route he has to take, and he only has a certain amount of time. He's in his early 30s already.
Yeah. Well, Mikey Garcia, he should go back. I think it would be really sharp if he can go back to 135 pounds. He said there was no money fights before at 135. Obviously, there is now at 135. Speaking of 135, the Luke Campbell and Ryan Garcia fight, I think it was December 5th. That's off as Luke Campbell tested positive for the coronavirus. And Keith Thurman smokes more weed than me, Godfather. I mean, he smokes a lot of weed. Every time I see the guy, he's stoned.
Have you heard the latest news that it's legal?
No, I'm not saying that. What I'm trying to say is that he is constantly, every time I see the dude on TV, he's buzzed. And, you know, I mean, I understand it's legal, this and that, but even I, as a proponent of cannabis, both medically and for recreational purposes, think that you can overdo it, and I think that Keith Thurman might have.
Well, I don't know much about that, so You're way ahead of me.
Well, my generation, your generation, you know, we're different. I laugh about that one. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. You remember when Manny Pacquiao, of course, upset Lidwaba, for the 122 pound title, and then he came to San Francisco. We had a big party here in the city by the bay. Of course, that's when they inducted me into the Northern California Hall of Fame, all that kind of good stuff. But it was 2001. He fought Agapito Sanchez. And that night, that was a rough night for Manny Pacquiao. And that was like a make or break type of fight. And thank goodness that, and I don't want to say there was any bias involved, but thank goodness the referee was who it was, because he went the way it should have went. You hear what I'm saying? In other words, another referee might have made a mistake. I think like last night, I think last night was a mistake. That's what I'm bringing up to Jason Maloney, fight, of course, with, the young man, Joshua Franco. You know, what do you have instant replay for if you don't use it?
I agree, particularly when there's, a question mark about the result of the fight. I don't know where to go from there.
I just, you know, I mean, and they went on for 30 minutes. Robert Byrd was the ringside official, the former, still a referee, I guess. Anyway, outstanding Hall of Fame referee, no doubt about that. And Russell Moore, who's been prone to more mistakes than a lot of people. He was the referee, and he said he missed the call. He didn't see the call. And at the end, they went for 30 minutes. They looked at the tape. And there was Godfather. If they didn't see what they were looking for the first or the second time, what did they think the 38th or the 40th time was going to do?
Well, I don't know. What I do know is that the positions of the cameras are very important to those kinds of incidents. So maybe they were trying to get a better shot at what was going on.
You might take this the wrong way. I don't care. But you know what was missing from last night's fight card? The HBO atmosphere. And that's not because you're with HBO or with HBO. It's just, it's missing. Boxing is not, it's not even, I mean, even without the crowd, it just wasn't. I didn't feel the specialness that I should have felt watching that fight, and I think a lot of it had to do with the broadcast team. I think you've got to deliver as a broadcast team, and I don't think those guys, in my mind, deliver.
Well, you're entitled to your own mind. But I think what made HBO at the time, and this is back in the, you know, early and all the way through the 80s, was that HBO was paying the kind of money that fighters would ultimately fight the best guy out there. And nobody else was paying that kind of money. And that helped build the show as a must-see if you were a sports fan.
Yeah, but even the boxing after dark, it had, you know, two young, hungry tigers. Sometimes guys you didn't really know, they were going at each other's throat. Two young, hungry guys looking to climb up the ladder. And, of course, the HBO championship boxing. Some of that was some showcase boxing for the champions. But when you guys did a pay-per-view card, it stepped out. It stood out. In other words, it was I don't want to say it was a seminal moment, but it was for that year in boxing. Do you hear where I'm coming from on that?
Look, I agree, and I think it was led by Sugar Ray Leonard, who was a star of the, I guess, 76 Olympics, and fought Duran early on twice, and was so good that he was willing to fight anybody, and did. And having Hearns and Hagler there at the same time, made a great merry-go-round because they all had, you know, their own records and identities, and they got a lot of exposure. So it helped to build that show into something really special.
Oh, freeze that thought. Freeze that thought.
How special until it was almost over.
You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Larry Murch returns after the break on Sports Byline.
All right.
Ow! Are we right? You going to run the one more?
5:30. All right.
message. I'll get back to you.
I will sue you for everything you have. I will sue your ass.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
Little insight there, little insider's thing here with the Rockford Files. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide, your inside look at the world of boxing, MMA. On the line from, we'll say, the City of Angels, Los Angeles, California. Of course, the retired HBO godfather, Larry Merchant. And Larry Merchant, looks like Tyson Porcheri is going to come back in 2021, that December 5th date he was going to put together is off. But is Deontay, you know, you and I have known a lot of boxers, and they've done crazy stuff, and they've said crazy stuff, and I'm not a big fan of guys getting interviewed after they got knocked out like Kell Brook was last night, but he did okay. That's why I cut the interview pretty short until he got bad. But, Tyson Fury and Deontay Wilder. Deontay Wilder said that the mask he took to the ring was too heavy. It made him tired. And then about a fortnight ago, he said that he issued an actual release, a video release. I watched part of it where he accused his trainer, Mark Breland, of spiking his water with muscle relaxers like Valiums or Xanax or something like that. Has he lost his mind?
Or he's telling the truth. But I think he needs for himself to be able to examine himself, put himself under the microscope to find out what he thinks went wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's what spurs him to train in different ways or to do the right things and so on and so forth. But I see the fight in a way as between a very good young athlete and Wilder who came late to boxing. I don't know if he was in his late teens or Early 20s.
He won the 2004. He had 2004 Olympic bronze.
And fighting a guy who's probably been throwing left hooks since he was in his cradle, because of his background as an Irish traveler. And at the end of the day, the guy who does it from the cradle on has a lot of advantages, and it's not going to go away.
Okay, and the other guy that sort of came on late in the game, of course, is the 2012 Olympic gold medalist, and Deontay Wilder was the 2004 Olympic bronze medalist, but 2012 Olympic gold medalist Anthony Joshua, he's taking on Pulev. How would you rate Joshua as far as a fighter's concerned? I mean, are his pluses and his minuses, what are they?
Well, he looks the part of a modern heavyweight, and he acts the role of being a heavyweight champion in a very smart way. But in the ring, he's just a pretty good, darn good fighter, who can fight in different styles, as he proved in his last fight against Ortiz, was it? Mm-hmm. He's a good athlete, and he can fight. Now, does that mean he's the best in the world? No, but there is a special feeling about him in Britain. And once again, if he should fight, win his next fight, and go on to fight Fury, I don't know how big a crowd they would draw.
Andrew in Vegas just shot me a text. He says, ask Larry if he thinks that today's welterweights are like the welterweights of the 80s. I mean, how do you compare different eras? And I mean, Sugar Ray Leonard's a once-in-a-lifetime type of athlete. I think Duran's a once-in-a-lifetime type of athlete as far as his lightweight and his welterweight endeavors were concerned. Of course, Marvin Hagler, maybe a once-in-a-lifetime middleweight. So these guys are all once-in-a-lifetime athletes. Are these guys today, outside of Manny Pacquiao, maybe once-in-a-lifetime athletes?
That's a good question. I think Manny Pacquiao has certainly caused his being in the biggest mountains in boxing.
Mm-hmm.
Be- because he's just a great fighter and who built a great following, not necessarily as a welterweight, but just as a fighter, a many divisions fighter.
Mm-hmm.
So I you know, everyone has their own special place if they're special fighters who fight everybody and show up. Are the other guys that way, that good? I don't know, but I don't know if they have to. That's asking an awful lot. Comparing fighters of different ages and not favorably, usually.
No, but the modern day athlete has the advantage of these new training methods and these and the nutrition, that kind of good stuff. And fights are 12 rounds now instead of 15. And that's a whole lot of difference. Cause I know guys that can go 12 rounds, but they couldn't even dream about ever going 15.
I agree with that. But one of the reasons I liked it when they went to 12 rounds was because in 15 round fights, fighters would manage to take a few rounds off anyway.
And some guys will get a huge lead after 10 rounds and dog it down the stretch. That would be crazy. I haven't done this in a while, but they used to announce the scores after each round. Were you in favor of that? I wasn't.
It was an experiment. People asking the question, Why in boxing, unlike all other sports, that the fans know the score? But the experiments, and I attended a couple of them, just didn't work out. It was a bigger drama of not knowing the score than knowing the score.
I think drama, they call it the theater of the unexpected or the theater of the deranged while boxing, professional boxing. And I think that they're just telling the score after each round sort of just spoiled the whole deal. Just like sort of threw water on the fire to me. Cause I mean, you want to know, I understand that some boxing is boxing judging is controversial. Some judges' scores are controversial, but not for the most part, Godfrey. For the most part, they run according to par.
I agree.
You know, and so this controversy people talk about is a little out of the way. Anyway, Crawford started slow, wiped out Kell Brook, no doubt about that. Want to mention this, Godfather, referee Joe Cortez in the hospital got the COVID virus in Las Vegas. He's 75 years old, and that's not ever good news when they check in. I don't know. You know, I'm this COVID thing, I tell you, Godfather, I'm scared to come in contact with people. It's just like, I don't want to say I'm paranoid, because if I was paranoid, it would be something, being scared of something that doesn't exist, and this virus exists. How do I balance life and paranoia?
Well, I would say that in this time, it's a pretty good idea to have some paranoia if it scares you into doing the right thing. We're apparently facing... 13th, 14th, and 15th rounds of what we've been going through over the next several months. And I just tell everybody in my world, says, close the show. Don't let your guard down.
You know, in the 1918 flu, I know I'm a nut, and I study all kinds of weird stuff because I read everything growing up. Once I learned how to read, I read everything. I would read every magazine. I read the newspaper from cover to cover, the obituaries, the stock pages. Doesn't matter. I read it just to read it. Anyway, how can I put this? When I look at the entire picture right now, and the fact that people don't read, there's no newspapers involved, and they're getting a lot of their information as far as the information they're making life decisions on from Facebook. Godfather, how do you take social media out of the picture or reduce its influence?
Well, I don't know how you take it out of the picture. I mean, it's here. You know, just as radio and television and so on come in and overpower previous forms of communication. The question is whether our governments will regulate this form of communications as they did with television and radio and even newspapers. There were certain regulations. And I like to tell people, we used to say when I was young, you have freedom of speech, but you can't yell fire in a crowded theater.
Yep, good point.
And so that you can have freedom of speech on these platforms, but if you're threatening people's lives, if you're making up stories about people and so on, there has to be a way to address that.
Okay, switching gears, well, positive note. Shakur Stevenson came in at the last minute. He says he'll fill this December 12th date against a guy by the name of Toka Khan Clary. Of course, this is going to go down at the MGM Grand in that bubble. Of course, 15-0. Well, I take that he isn't 15. That's the other guy. Anyway, bottom line is he came in at the last minute. Is Shakur Stevenson, he's one of those guys who stopped at 126 for like 110 minutes. Now he's at 130. Shouldn't guys really make a statement before they move up in weight?
Well, that's one of the new things in boxing. Every sport, when you think about it, has changed in significant ways and over time. And one of the new things in boxing is you establish yourself, and then if there's a challenge, 4 pounds this way or that way, you take it. And some guys have thrived on that.
Okay. Shakur Stevens scores 2016 Olympic silver medalist, 14-08 KOs. Khan Clary is 28-2, 19 KOs. That's going to go down on ESPN December the 12th. Props to Bob Arum. I almost had a little too, I called another promoter friend of mine this morning and he was huffing and puffing on the phone. He wasn't doing that well. So it sort of brought tears to my eyes, but I sort of brought tears to my eyes last night watching Bob Arum out there kicking ass at 87, 88 years old. He's loving life. And guess what? I think he's putting on some good fights.
He's a singular personality in boxing history as a promoter, having been around for half a century and had so many star fighters and a staff and crew that knows how to maneuver fighters into major events and so on and so forth.
Former U.S. attorney.
I give him credit. I have to tell you this, though.
What?
At the end of the day, promoters are just salesmen, right?
Mm-hmm.
And when I was at HBO, there came a point where I said to my guys and my producers and such, you know, you put these guys on, and they give you a view of their guy that's always going to be positive. I said, why don't we use that time to spend with the fighters? And we stopped interviewing promoters after fights.
I'm going to leave you with this Bob Arum quote. And I was there. Yesterday I was lying, but today I'm telling the truth. Godfather, you have a good weekend. Kiss the Godmama for me.
And that's the truth.
Larry Merchant, the Hall of Famer on Ring Talk Live Worldwide, baby. Ring Talk Live Worldwide, your inside look in the world of boxing and MMA, of course, the Sunday edition, 11 a.m. Pacific on 2 hours live on Sports Byline, iHeartRadio, SiriusXM, Satellite Radio, Channel 211, like 1,000 other internet platforms. Want to throw this shout out, and I mentioned a little bit earlier, of course, referee Joe Cortez, 75 years old in the hospital in Las Vegas with COVID issues, of course, 13-1 as a professional, two KOs. He's a great referee, no doubt about that. I televised some of the fights he did as a referee. Of course, I'm talking about who was Johnny Ruiz and Evander Holyfield back in the 90s or the early 2000s. Bottom line is Joe Cortez, a class act, no doubt about that. Always has a lot of respect for me when I see him. The respect is mutual, and I don't respect everybody in boxing. Believe me, I don't respect everybody in the world. Anyway, bottom line is he's in the hospital. I saw some clips where he did an exhibition with Mike Tyson. I think I saw an exhibition, and he got knocked out by Mike Tyson. If that was the same thing, Joe's got a lot of stones stepping in there, even with a teenage Mike Tyson. Speaking of Mike Tyson, we'll check in with Mike Tyson in hour number two. Of course, Mike Tyson, his attitudes, and, of course, the upcoming exhibition with Roy Jones going to take place in just a couple of weeks. So Roy Jones, Mike Tyson, Joe Cortez. Joe's in the hospital now. Chances are Roy's going to be in the hospital soon, don't you think? This is Ring Talk Live Worldwide, your inside look in the world of boxing and MMA. Next week on the Sunday edition of Ring Talk Live Worldwide, we'll bring in a girl that has three B's. She's blonde, she's brilliant, and she's beautiful. I'm talking about Jennifer Childers, of course, the former professional boxer, undefeated, model, promoter, matchmaker. She's run the gamut in the world of boxing. We'll talk with her in depth next week on Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Hour number two, I bring you Ali Tyson, and of course, we'll have a special guest in addition. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Stay tuned for hour number two, live on Sports Byline, iHeartRadio, SiriusXM, Satellite Radio, Channel 211.